executive director of the Hawthorne Valley Association. Am I right about that?
That is correct.
I had to stop a minute because I think of Hawthorne Valley School, Hawthorne Valley Farm School, I mean a farm stand or food store. So tell me what the structure is of the Hawthorne Valley Association.
Okay, the association is a 501c3, started in 1971, and the mission is to work towards the renewal of society and culture through the integration of education, agriculture, and the arts. So we're located on a 400-acre biodynamic farm out in Hillsdale, Ghent, and Austerlitz. The three towns converge on the farm, and it's a very diverse farm with the dairy herd and the on-site creamery doing the value adding to the milk. We have a bakery, a kraut cellar. We do five green markets in Manhattan. We have four CSA groups, and then that's kind of the say the more commercial side of the farm, and then we have all of the educational programs. And since 1972, we've been bringing school children from urban areas onto the farm for a week visit. A lot of nine-year-olds come, a lot of third grades, about 600 children a year for all those years, living on the farm, doing farm chores, learning where the food is coming from, what stewarding the earth is like, looking at the night sky, things that you don't get to see in an urban area, and just making a very vital connection to the natural world and to their peer group, and actually I think to themselves. So that's some of the educational programming on the farm. We do a lot of day programming. As you probably know, we're in Hudson doing in-school and after-school programming and working with some of the other groups in Hudson. And we have a lot of children coming out to the farm right now for our Kids Can Cook summer camp, which is a day camp. We also have residential camps. We have our Farmscape Ecology program, which is doing this scientific research, looking at the intersection of agriculture and ecology and human interaction with the landscape, and how might we do that in an elegant way that works for all. We have adult education. We have a small publishing press. We have a little research center on money and...
What kind of things do you publish?
Mostly we've been publishing science textbooks that are taking a phenomenological approach to science, some poetry, some local authors, and our most recent book just about to come out is actually written by Dr. Conrad Vispo, who is one of the scientists in the Farmscape Ecology program. And it's a history, or a natural history in a way, of Columbia County. Hmm. And it'll be have a kind of a field guide component to it.
When you say a phenomenological approach to landscape, what exactly does that mean?
This is, Goethe, the great German poet and also scientist, he had a more observational approach to science and didn't really buy into the idea that you could really say science is fully objective, that the subject actually does have a relationship to even how an experiment might turn out. And so trying to take that into account, his approach was that one enters into the observation wholly and fully and really forms a relationship with that which one is observing. He really did this quite a bit with plant life. And we take that up as a pathway or schooling of our thinking, how one might change thinking. And that's really taken up at the Nature Institute, which is an initiative that's right on the edge of Hawthorne Valley Farm, not part of Hawthorne Valley Association, but very much a sister organization to former teachers at Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, which I didn't mention yet in my spiel. And they are taking this Goethean approach to science very seriously. And Craig Holdridge, one of the founders, has written several books. His most recent is called Thinking Like a Plant.
So this is a... we do want to hear about the school. It's a very, the whole overall association, though, is a very big operation, it sounds like.
Yeah, we have about roughly 180 people working at Hawthorne Valley. Probably half of those are full-time, and the other half part-time, and it's a diversity of activities. It's, I think, interesting that you have the built-in tension between the more cultural pedagogical side of the association and the more kind of commercial enterprise side, which helps to make it all possible financially. And just anyone knows in agriculture, trying to have a farm operate in the black is, especially now with climate chaos, no, it's not a given. It's not easy. And then to invite, you know, a thousand or more children onto the farm over the course of a year to be swarming in and out and doing work on the farm is makes it that much more interesting. But we've navigated that field for 42 years on the farm, and I think that is actually one of our strengths, because it helps you to develop social muscles, to learn how to work things out. And I think the idea that we're trying to reintegrate things rather than make everything separate and fragmented and atomized, which is, I think, what part leads to a lot of our modern crises. So we're glad that it's as difficult as it is at times, we're glad we have to do it.
And you also have some affiliations with things like Walking the Dog Theater, don't you? And
yes, Walking the Dog has always been a sister organization, and David Anderson, the creative director at Walking the Dog, has been directing our 10th and 12th grade plays at Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School for a number of years now. And just this year, Walking the Dog became a formal initiative of Hawthorne Valley Association. They're actually now part of the association.
Oh, great.
Yeah, nice merger.
Does that mean that, by the way, going back a step, that the store, the Hawthorne Valley store, completely supports the program with its profits?
Well, I wouldn't say completely, because retail grocery is also, we've picked all the winners.
Yeah, right.
Independent education, margin, agriculture, and retail. It's like, there's not a big margin in retail grocery.
Yeah.
However, that being said, the fact that everything is together, there's a dynamic that's created, and it allows for a certain vitality that has been building over the years for, you know, meeting a lot of human needs in one place. It brings a lot of people together. The fact that we have this many families in the school helps support the store. The fact that the store is there provides a kind of gravitas and anchor for a lifestyle choice that people find attractive. So you put it all together and it's helpful. And the fact that we actually have a farm that can operate basically at, you know, break even, allows for all this cultural programming to happen without the cultural programming having to raise money every year to have access to a landscape. So it does at the end work out. Everyone, all these different initiatives, and there are many, everyone operates with their own budgets, their own P&Ls, and there's no kind of
P&Ls, what is that?
Profit and loss statements. There's no there's no commingling of funds. Everything is really tracked down to the penny. Even if it's an interdepartmental transfer and there's no actual cash exchange, the value is tracked on paper, and we keep everything really, really tracked, and we know how everyone is doing. At the end of the year, when we have our independent audit done by a firm here in town, it's one company, and it's audited as one company, and so that's, you know, it can be experienced that way, but in the day-to-day working, it's not like the school's not doing so well, so we'll just peel a little bit off the store's profits, and, you know, everything would be done extremely consciously.
Mm. Well, one of the reasons why we wanted you to come in...
Ellen's been dying to ask you this. Sorry.
is that rumors are flying, of course, around Hudson about the fact that the Galvan Foundation is working on a building at the corner, almost at the corner of 5th and Warren, which would be a food store, a supermarket, so to speak, for Hudson, which has been an ongoing problem for a very long time, of course. There used to be lots of supermarkets here when there was a bigger population. And it's several attempts have been made. There was an attempt recently, or a year or two ago, maybe now, to start a co-op grocery. There was a food store in where Musica, the music store now is, at the corner of Columbia and 4th. And Hawthorne Valley has been rumored as the operation that would come in and operate the store there. So, and I know that you a few months ago had meetings, community meetings, to kind of talk with the community on what they would want, where such a store might be located. I don't know what other questions you were trying to have answered, but I'm curious to know, and our listeners certainly are, about what the real story is here. And I'm curious to know what you learned in those meetings also.
Sure.
So.
Well, it is our intention, and there's, you know, between now and actually opening the doors on a retail grocery outlet here in Hudson, there's any number of things that can happen, but it's very much our intention to open a grocery store in Hudson. And we're really excited about it. I'm particularly excited about it. I put a lot of effort into this over the last couple of years. And it's, you know, we want to do it right. We want to do it well. We want it to succeed. There's no point in doing it if it can't. We're quite busy where we are right now. It's not like we're really sitting around looking for something extra to do, but we're particularly interested in the challenge of coming into Hudson and meeting this need that we also perceive, that there's a real opening for food access and addressing food access questions across the board here in Hudson. That's as I said in the community meetings, there's a whole level of uphill climbing in trying to meet those needs and do it in a way that's going to work for everybody. And I don't know that we're going to be able to, well, I can say pretty certainly we're not going to be able to be all things to all people on day one. That's just, I think, unrealistic. And one of the things I did learn from those meetings is there's extremely high expectations for what a grocery store in downtown Hudson could be. All of the expectations are spot on. They're all great. I wouldn't dispute any of them. And to be able to do all of that all at once and keep the doors open will be a Herculean feat that I'm not sure anybody's up to, and I'm not sure we are. We're certainly up to trying. And in order to be successful on all of the levels that were discussed in those meetings as far as how this can really benefit the entire community of Hudson, will require some time, and through that time we need to keep the doors open. So it's going to be it's going to be a bit of a dance to get this thing up and running, bring our food mission in, which is good, clean, fair food, sort of like I'm stealing that or plagiarizing from slow food, but I think we all know what we mean by that, as far as trying to support the local food system, support our local farmers, local value adders, support a food system that's actually working in a regenerative way with the earth and not just buying into a food-like substance system that's highly subsidized and has all kinds of cracks and is, you know, we see some of the outcomes of that food system. So that being said, there's a lot of education to do. There's a lot of listening to do. There's a lot of just working collaboratively with people in the region to try to make that happen and work for everybody. And we're one of the reasons why it has taken us this long is we're just trying to do a lot of research how to approach this issue, and especially the issue of food access to, you know, to everyone in the city in a way that will work while still bringing in our kind of food mission.
You said to me when we were chatting about this a couple of weeks ago that you would start probably with what you know and then add other approaches in order to make the store accessible to everybody at a later point. So it seems to me that you have to be able to hang on for a while you're establishing all those steps. That requires more financing, doesn't it, to be able to kind of hang on while you're going through this period.
Again, if we come in and we can't make a go of it and we have to shut the doors, then the whole idea of what we might be trying to address and work with the rest of the community on all of these issues in a collaborative way will just be, you know, it's not gonna, nothing's gonna happen. We'll just go away and feel bruised for having not succeeded. So the idea that we would stick with what we know is some advice we've gotten in this whole research project, which I think is pretty sound. And this comes from a lot of ideas of introducing things that we don't currently do in Harlemville at the store mm-hmm. on the farm. And there are things that we would like to do. There are things that we would like to do out there, but we don't know that we necessarily could do them because of questions of volume and like, a fresh meat, more fresh meat counter or something like this. So we're going to be tracking all these things. What do the city, the residents of Hudson really want? And as far as the food access piece, I mean, one of the things that we hope will begin to address that, and of course it's just a beginning, but just hiring out of the community will be, I hope, one way of making this feel like it's a community store. And when you have, colleagues and coworkers whose families can receive a discount, that's already going to take a little bit of the edge off as far as the price point questions. And then there are other ideas that I had mentioned to you in our phone conversation around other ways of trying to make good food accessible to all with some creative financing at the register. We are researching all these, and we will be trying all these methodologies out so that, again, we're primarily supporting the farmers in our region, making sure that they are getting a living wage and able to hang on and continue to work the land and support the businesses that they support in the county and bring that good food in here so people have access to fresh, vital food. And
do you still, I know it was written somewhere at some point that you were concerned also with having an education program on the second floor. Is that still part of the plan, or is that just?
That's absolutely part of the plan. Mm-hmm. And how we can use that as a community resource, and again, working with all the great educational programs that already exist in Hudson, because there's no reason to duplicate
to reinvent,
any. Yeah, I mean, there's so much good programming going on with Kite's Nest and with TSL and others. So, and Solaris, all of whom we partner with already, and we would just want to basically get underneath their work and support them even more, and hopefully be a resource to all the programs. And then if there's something that we all determine is an area that's not currently being addressed, well, we will be happy to jump in and bring whatever expertise that we have. One area that we're interested in is we've been doing, training of farmers for the whole time we've been in business. We have 9 apprentices every year. We have Farm Beginnings. We have an intensive in biodynamics. We do some training in the food artisanal units, the bakery, the kraut, and the creamery. We want to do more of that, and we want to actually work with other business owners in the community to see how can we provide kind of on-ramps for people living in Hudson to have decent, at least decent entry-level jobs to begin with, and to hopefully have a stable of entrepreneurs who would mentor some of these people. So if they come up with a good idea, say, let's go for it. Let's find a way, let's get some capital, and let's find a way to support you. And this came out of one of the community meetings. There was a great moment when somebody said, you're going to sell Snickers bars in the store, right? And we didn't quite answer them. We don't have Snickers at Hawthorne Valley currently. And then we said afterwards, well, why don't we start a chocolate bar company here? Like, make your own version, and we'll sell those in the store instead. And then, and just that kind of an idea. Mm-hmm. Rather than, let's do import replacement locally rather than just buying in something that's that you can get anywhere else.
Right. I guess the other question I have, I'm not sure how to phrase this, but has your potential landlord made specific demands on what you have or make available in the store?
They've been very concerned about the food access, and that they, the very first question that they asked when they came out and visited Hawthorne Valley was, will people get sticker shock when they see the price of your tomatoes? I said, maybe, if they were to come out here, that might be the case. And we're supporting, the tomatoes are coming from all local farmers mm-hmm. in the county. So this is a tough one, right? And we had a nice long conversation about that and how one might, again, still be able to support the farmer and find creative ways to do some subsidization at the register. But I did want to make the point to them that, as I did recently with, I think it was USA Today or someone who called me and interviewed me around the question of, is the way you eat elitist? And I said, I want to say right from the get-go, yes, there are too many people who are having a difficulty putting anything on the table. That's wrong. No one should accept that. And look at what I'm eating. Look at the produce case in Hawthorne Valley. Look at the names of these farmers. Any one of these farmers would invite you over. Any one of them would open up their books and show you what they're making, and you could see their lifestyle, and you can determine, you can tell me then if the way I'm eating is supporting elitism. Because I honestly don't buy it, and I get a little bit even sensitive to the fact that we have to like defend the term organic agriculture or biodynamic agriculture, when actually both are just agriculture. It's how people ate for 10,000 years. I think the other side, that's
without government subsidies or all the other things, that
I think they should be on the defensive. Right. I don't think we should. I find the whole thing, the argument is it's going the wrong way, and I would like to have the citizens of Hudson completely united to just say good, clean, fair food is a right. It's not a privilege. Mm-hmm. It's not a luxury. And let's just all have that right. And
I guess what I was hinting at is that your potential landlord has a different agenda, perhaps, than you do.
Can we name the potential landlord?
Well, the Galvin.
Yeah, so they're
Galvin organization. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that I've heard from them, as far as it was this question: Can you do this in a way that you're not leaving people out? That was their concern, and I would say that's our concern as well. So we share that
but it's
concern.
Not a deal breaking type of thing, or.
I don't think so. Okay. Not at all. I mean, we're still very much in conversation, and we're at this point in time, just so you and the listeners know, we have been working with our retail consultant who does our layout on our store. He gave us three different layouts for the store at 449 Warren, which we then sent back with all of our comments. We now have the fourth version, which is the one that's getting extremely close to what will probably actually go in. We have done work with a local engineer in town looking at the lot next door to create green space and hopefully a little bit of parking on the back side of the lot.
That's been a bit of an issue, right?
Parking is essential, and they've remained open to it and we haven't proposed the plan to them yet as far as what that would look like, but we actually now have a sketch from the engineer.
I have a very minor question that'll silence someone on Facebook. Are the doors that are currently there the doors that would eventually be part of the store?
No.
Thank you.
I doubt it. that's not really a good retail layout. Right. And what we would like to do, I mean, that'll get changed around a little bit.
Good to know.
I mean, we want food to be accessible to Hudson, but if four doors opening out on Warren Street might make it a little bit too accessible.
Well, I hope that guy is listening.
I've got a lot of questions now. Galvan organization, are they going to do the interior work and deliver the store to you, not only the outside but the inside as you need to have it?
We are still in negotiations on the lease, so probably what we will hope for, and this is not finalized in any way, shape or form, it's what I'm actually working on pretty hard right now. We would probably want them to deliver a basically vanilla box, so they have the whole the room for us, and then we would want to do the inside ourselves. Although there are things in there that would be we would want an allowance because they're actually things that would become
permanent
parts of the real fixture. So it would just be a tenant allowance, and what that would be per square foot is something we'd have to negotiate based on. And this is why we need the store design. So you get into these cart horse moments, and I'm spending, I'm starting the meter's really running. I'm spending a lot of money on consultants and things to get this all going, and we haven't signed a lease yet because you can't sign a lease because these are things that determine a lot of the base points within the lease. So we're still working on a memorandum of understanding. But I have to say, in all my face-to-face meetings with Galvan, they've been extremely conciliatory on every point we brought up. They've not had any kind of allergic reaction to anything we've proposed so far, and we've proposed some fairly radical things as possibilities, and they've been like a living roof on the and a rooftop garden. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, okay, if that makes sense to you guys. So they've been pretty good to work with so far.
If things possibly don't work out with them, are you still wedded to coming to Hudson with a store?
Yes.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, no, I love Hudson. I think it's such an important, it's the center of the county, and I think the people of Hudson deserve access to good food. I would hope that we could be participate in making that a reality. So absolutely, we would look at other options and work with others to, you know, we as it says right in our original proposal that we gave to Galvan, we just put in that we were also looking at other locations in case it didn't work out.
You talked about a couple of other questions. You talked about subsidizing at the register. Could you explain that to our audience? I know there are several ways of doing that.
Sure. So first off would be anyone who's working in a store could get a employee discount, and that would be extended to their families. And the way that I would design all of these discounts that I might speak about and any more that we haven't even thought of would be that we would design a POS system where everybody would have a card, and when you go to the register and you check out, your number goes in and essentially it applies your discount. So nobody else has to know what discount you're getting or not getting. And there are people, you know, we will happily accept SNAP and WIC, and there are ways that we're hoping that we can work with some of the creative organizations that currently double up or add value to SNAP and WIC at farmers markets like Wholesome Wave or Fair Food Network to see if they might be willing to extend that to a market that is really has as its main purpose strengthening a local living economy by supporting most of the region, you know, having most of the produce and other value-added products coming from the region, and to see if there is some way we can extend that kind of program into the market here as a prototype. There's also a very interesting program that comes out of the slow money movement, and it's a friend of mine and fellow co-founder of Slow Money out in San Francisco who has started something called Credibles, and it's edible credit. And what's happening is people are helping to capitalize food markets and food entities with upfront capital that then allows them to receive a discount when they're, so somebody might, if we can make this happen here, and I've talked to Arno and he said definitely we can do this, you know, people can help capitalize the store, put some money down, and then they're getting 10% back out of the register or whatever it ends up being.
That's like a co-op kind of, isn't it? You're buying into the
It's a prepay. It becomes a prepay. It actually falls into the sort of coupon category. So you can get into it without having to be accredited investors and everything. And
mm-hmm.
There's a way to do it without
rankling
the SEC.
Right. I was just going to say, because if you offer shares, you have to go file with the SEC.
Yeah. So it's a way of not having to file with the SEC. And what interested me in it was, I said, well, okay, is there anybody that's using Credibles and saying, well, say I might put some money in and maybe the 10% is not that much of an issue for me. So I could say, put my 10% on a house account that then gets applied to somebody else's card who actually it would make more of a difference in their lives than it would make in my life. And that is absolutely being done. People's Grocery in Oakland, other places are finding ways to do that. I love that because that then becomes this community engagement where we can all say my work and my efforts are going towards meeting the needs of my community, and therefore I know my needs are going to be met. This is what we call the fundamental social law, and I think that there are a lot of people in Hudson and in Columbia County who would be very happy to participate in something like that. And again, if you were one of the people who were on the receiving end of that part of the gift economy, it would just show up at the register and nobody would have to know one way or the other. This is just what we hope to design. It sounds maybe a little tiny bit complicated, but I don't think at the end of the day that much, you know, I think we can do that.
How do you get people from the sort of outer edges of the business district to come into onto Warren Street to buy their groceries.
Well, describe outer edge of the business district.
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking of where the low-income people are living, probably more in the second ward.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not used to, you know, not used to coming to Warren Street because they think there's nothing there for them.
Yep. So again, over time, one thing will be if we are fortunate enough to hire some folks from the second ward, and mm-hmm. and then that's just they're going to be able to say, it's not that it's a grocery store. It's not that strange of a place. We also were thinking
and
of
not that far to walk.
Starting a,
right.
We also have an idea of getting a couple of food trucks, and parking them in different locations around the city, and having a little pop up grocery stores that could be a kind of a introduction and a softer entry into saying, mm-hmm. Oh, come mm-hmm. on over and see the whole store. We hope some of the programming that we can do upstairs. We have some ideas around, meal sharing and people cooking, like demonstration cooking out of what you can buy downstairs, and do it in a way that is, you know, what people are passionate about. This is what I love to eat. And there's all kinds of really cool stuff going on out there where people do things where they do blindfolded, blind tasting. But just, you know, community building ideas around recognizing, coming around together around food, which is always a great way to come together, and celebrating food and celebrating hopefully our diversity, which is something to celebrate, and hopefully breaking down some of the perceptions that we have, that we don't have that much in common, because the truth is we have way more in common, all of us, than we don't have in common. By a wide margin. And so to build on those elements of what we have in common, build some mutual respect, mutual rapport, mutual understanding, and then once we do that, we can get at the few things that we don't have in common in a more, hopefully more productive way.
The other thing is the sticker shock you described. I think what happened with the grocery store that was in Musica, if I can say this, is that people would come in and it looked like a fancy grocery store, number one. And they would look at the prices. The store had things, you know, organic products and non-organic products. But people would look at the prices of the organic, which was much more expensive, and say, I'm not going to pay that much for a head of lettuce, you know. And so they never came back. So as the store evolved and tried to you know, present itself differently, it was too late to reach those people because they had been driven away in the beginning.
Mm.
So it's, I don't know what the solution to that is, but...
competent management.
There you go.
Not to put too...
Well, so there are stores like... In larger markets than Hudson. So Hudson's going to be tricky. There's no question. And also Hudson, as you were alluding to before with, you know, folks on Facebook and the blogosphere, it's you are being constantly watched. And mm-hmm. maybe this is like this everywhere, but I'm you know, a little bit sensitive to it here in Hudson, because every time anything goes, like somebody putting those posters up on the store about a high-end store coming up.
Oh, right, that's right.
You know, and then I'm getting, my phone is ringing off the hook, and I'm getting calls from people as far as, you know, all up and down Hudson Valley.
Well, I have to tell you, my friends at Kite's Nest tell me they have ceased to respond to rumors on Facebook.
It's the smartest thing to do. I don't have a Facebook account.
Because there was, for example, someone posted somewhere about the farm, the group garden that they've been doing down at the building down off the river, and how could you do it there? That's a dump site and blah, blah, blah. Well, they had had that. It's all been tested. It's
sure.
All clear. It's just it's completely off the track. I mean, mm-hmm. It's wrong, simply. But, you know.
We have to just keep doing the work. And if we get distracted all the time by, you know, people's perceptions, opinions, whatever, and that's not to say that there are occasionally we can put out, like, FAQs or something just to so that people who want to know what the facts are and actually mm-hmm. believe in them and go with that, rather than, you know, just wanting to make up new mythologies better. It's so it'll be tricky. But in getting back to on point, in these larger markets like say Brattleboro, Burlington, where the co-ops are have actually found a way to deal with this question of accessibility and meeting the needs of multiple stakeholders from a full spectrum of economic realities, that's we can learn from them. And fortunately, I have relationships with all these folks, and so we can see what they're doing and try to, you know, recreate it on a smaller scale in a way that is, again, holding true to our values, because we don't want to, if we're all going to race to the bottom for the lowest common denominator because it's all about it's only all about price in the end, then
we're not gonna
I mean, there's no point to come in and do that, right?
And I think in answer to Ellen's question, the point was the people who ran that store didn't have that as a goal. They were not so much interested in appealing to a wide economic spectrum.
Right.
That, you know what I mean?
I think in the end, you're absolutely right about it. That isn't how it was presented.
Right.
Or it's what the community's expectation was. Mm-hmm. Did not match what the people who were managing the store mm-hmm. had in mind, I think.
I don't know enough about it. I should probably learn a little bit just from so you don't recreate any of the, you know. But let's say also it's a different time now, and Hudson is a different, you know, Hudson has evolved quite a bit since that was
That's
going on.
That's true.
And there's a little bit more, I would say, moving towards critical mass in Hudson as far as being able to support a grocery store in the downtown region. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons we looked after that went out. We were approached by Pat Manning, who was the assemblyman at the time, and he tried to get us to come in and open up in that location. Also down at...
Is he trying to sell you solar energy these days?
Yeah, he's been out. We've been down to... we also looked down by the train station. And the reality was, even if the locations were perfect, okay, the timing wasn't right. And even and that's not just looking at Hudson. That's looking at Hawthorne Valley's own biography.
Mm-hmm.
We now have a really, really fantastic Cracker Jack management team in our store with Dana Wagner as our manager and a couple of the younger fellows who are residents of Hudson. You'll be happy to know. And they're just really, really sharp. And I have huge confidence in their abilities now to both run Harlemville, and I don't know if you've been out there, but there's an addition going on to the store right now.
Wow.
One side's been opened up, and it's going to be, you know, we're doing this little bump out, doubling the cafe area and adding a little more retail space, and we'll do a whole reset at the front of the store out there. So we're trying to plan coming into Hudson while we're expanding out there. It's been quite a summer.
Well, you sound like a really busy person, so we're doubly glad that you took the time to come and let our listeners know what's happening and hopefully answer some questions that are floating around. Tom, do you have any more questions for Mr.
No questions, just the comment that I think Ellen is hoping this appears in the Register Star tomorrow.
What?
No, I'm kidding.
I would just say
Ellen's been very excited about your visiting us,
and I'm grateful to the citizens of Hudson, because we've been really receiving a lot of encouragement for the whole time we've been looking at this.
That's
and
great.
And that's been really gratifying, and I hope we can live up to it, and at the end of the day, you know, some point down in the future, we'll all be sitting around here celebrating over a bottle of kombucha or something.
Yeah. Whatever that is.
What
is kombucha?
Kombucha. It's bubbly. And,
okay.
It's a tea with a fermented mushroom floating around.
Ooh, hey, mushroom. Doing some shrooms. That's, yeah, okay.
Okay, we're looking forward to that.
Well, right, thanks, Jake? Again. That's really, thank you for coming in, because there's been a lot of questions around town, and we're glad you came in.
Well, if they start heating up again, I'll come back.
Great. We've been talking to Martin Ping, of course, from Hawthorne Valley Association. And I hope you will come again. And we'll just keep the dialogue going, if that's
absolutely
okay with you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.